the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and it is Thursday, or as we like to call it around here, Friday Eve. Welcome to it. Hopefully, I don't float away over the course of the next hour, because I got to tell you, if I can only turn the camera this way, you would not believe the storm that is over us right now. I'm in the town of Coral Springs, Florida, and if you were to pull up radar, we are in the midst of a major weather advisory. I think I even got an alert on my phone saying, watch out, it's ugly out there. And this has nothing to do with Elsa. Elsa is long past here. Pfizer developing, Lava Q in the chat room just posted, breaking, Pfizer developing COVID-19 booster targeting Delta. If okayed, clinical trials will begin in August. It's a little too late. I'm sorry. It is just too late. I got to share something with you. An article written by John Pavlovitz. Do you remember him? This guy, I'd never heard of him before, but I've seen him posting on social media and writing these articles. And he's the one who talked about the fact that we are not radical at all. I mean, it was a great piece a couple of years ago that made me take notice of him. Well, this goes to, you know, what Lava just posted in the chat room, let me see if I can't pull this article up. The headline reads, our family got vaccinated, then we all got COVID. Seriously. And if you listen, you'll hear the thunder. Jackson's in here, just so you know. So if he starts barking, it's because my little guy hates the thunder and lightning. It freaks him out. So this is our remedy. It's called Rescue Remedy. I don't get paid for this, but this is for pets. It's for animals, natural stress relief for pets, Rescue Remedy. And he loves this stuff because I think it gets him buzzed. So I gave him a double dose of it a little while ago, and hopefully the thunder won't bother him anymore. But if he barks, or so, that's why, because he's in here with me because it's storming out there. All right. Now to John Pavlovitz. Here's what he wrote. And I'm telling you this to make you understand. I, you know, if you're listening to this show, chances are pretty good you've been vaccinated and you understand how precarious our situation is. But here's what he wrote. 2 weeks ago, we took a family trip out of state, our first in 18 months. Three quarters of us had been fully vaccinated with two doses of the Pfizer shot, with the exception being our 11-year-old daughter. Because she's too young. They don't give them to kids that young yet. We'd been extremely diligent for a year and a half, often militant, in taking precautions, isolating and masking and distancing since March of 2020. My wife, 16-year-old son, and I all registered for the vaccines the first day we were eligible in order to give our family the best chance of protection moving forward. I was ecstatic to get jabbed. We all were. It felt like we could exhale for the first time in a long time. I know that feeling, right? You do too. I remember the first time I was able to hug my daughter again, right? It was a sense of relief. Anyway, he continues, after our waiting period was over, we were hopeful we could finally begin doing some normal things and left for our first family vacation since lockdown began. We were being as careful as we could while traveling. But as vaccinated adults, it's easy to let your guard down and to generally be less attentive than you had been regarding wearing masks and hand sanitizing and distancing. False security began to set in. A few days into the trip, our daughter started complaining about headaches, which we attributed to the heat and to the general fatigue of travel and activity. The next day, she began to get congestion and said her throat was sore. We expected her allergies were just flaring up, but we'd seen enough stories not to take any chances. We brought her to the local clinic and received a positive test for COVID-19. It was extremely disappointing, but we knew that with her age, she likely wasn't going to have escalating symptoms. We immediately headed straight home and began family lockdown together. This is when we made our big mistake. With the rest of us fully vaccinated, We felt less vulnerable being home with our daughter without constant masking and distancing. But that illusion didn't last very long. After developing increasingly worsening cold symptoms, my wife got tested and we were stunned to get a positive for her. A breakthrough case. What are the odds, we asked ourselves. I'd felt poorly earlier in the week, but had two negative tests in a row and imagined I'd just gotten a rare summer cold. After feeling much worse over the weekend, I took my third test, which came back positive for COVID. Our son was asymptomatic, but we had him tested as a precaution, and he returned a positive result as well. So amazingly, he writes, we are 4 for 4 with COVID here in our house, with 3 fully vaccinated people testing positive for the virus, 2 of us symptomatic. I'm not sure what the odds are, but we're seriously considering the lottery. I can't say we aren't a little more than disappointed to be here after being so careful and diligent for a year and a half, but I also feel extremely fortunate. We'll likely all recover quickly. However, not everyone will be that lucky. The doctor who gave me my test results said that this Delta variant is frightening and unpredictable, showing a velocity and ease of transition that she wishes people understood and took seriously. She's been alarmed at how quickly it has spread and by how many people are still avoiding the vaccine, giving the virus an advantage. It shouldn't have at this point. I'm hopefully in the worst of it now. Congestion, headache, body aches, cough, fatigue, etc. I lost my sense of taste and smell, which for a devoted foodie is torture. But overall, it feels like a very bad cold, which feels like good news. I shudder to think how bad it might have been had we not been vaccinated. If I could share a few words with you, they would be these. Please get vaccinated if you haven't. It's the only way we're going to get the edge on these dangerous variants, and it will keep you from the worst symptoms and very likely save your life. The ferocity and speed of the mutations of this virus are startling. Once you're vaccinated, don't let your guard down. You are protected, but you're not invincible. And whether you're vaccinated or not, he writes, I urge you to get tested if you're feeling sick. Testing is so inexpensive, fast, and convenient right now. We were able to immediately find a location, drive up, self-swab our nostrils, and in 30 minutes got the results. We were told by the doctor who tested our daughter that many parents don't get their children tested and allow them to spread the virus exponentially. And please consider still masking after getting your vaccine. It may feel redundant or excessive, but it's still vitally important to show the spread, to slow the spread of this virus. We're simply not out of this yet, and we need to take care of ourselves and one another. Our summer was derailed for a few weeks, but we'll still have one and others going forward, thankfully. We'll all still be here, a little wiser as well. Please be careful out there. That's John Pavlovitz. It's posted on his website, johnpavlovitz.com. And, I can't believe I'm saying this, better him than me or you, but it shouldn't happen to any of us. The selfishness of these idiots who refuse to get a shot that will protect them and, more importantly, protect other people is just astounding. And the asshole of these people in proclaiming, I will not get vaccinated, is just sickening. It's just got to stop. It really does. And so I feel for them. That said, I'm not traveling anywhere anytime soon. I mean, the most we do is, you know, David and I will head out for dinner once in a while. A week from Saturday, finally, we're going to see the Van Gogh exhibit. But the one we're going to, it requires masks and it limits the number of people who can be in at any time to keep social distancing going, hopefully. I don't understand these people who are so selfish. They won't do it. And then you heard about the hospital, I want to say in Houston, Texas, where over 100 staffers were fired because they refuse to get vaccinated. These are healthcare professionals, allegedly. And I'm sorry, if I went into a hospital and found out that a good portion of the staff refused to get vaccinated, I'd hightail it out of there so fast your head would spin. My head would spin. Anyway, did I hear about Chris Kattan on the plane? No. Chris Kattan, I don't even know who that is, John Doe in the chat room. John Doe in the chat room said, did you hear about Chris Kattan on the plane? I know there's a little lag between me saying the words and the people watching on YouTube hearing them. But John Doe, please do tell, because I don't know. They should be reinstating mask mandates. And the thing is, you know, I'm here in Florida, and I'm kind of amazed that the power is still on because we are in the midst of this big storm. It appears to have let up a little bit. No, it's still pouring. Anyway, because usually the power flickers out because Florida Power and Light can't keep the lights on when it's raining. So go figure. Anyway, so all that's going on. I saw, you know, there's an article that I read today that just blew my mind. And allow me a moment of personal privilege here. I'll play, you know, as if I'm in Congress for a moment and keep looking over to see if John Doe explains what the deal was with Chris Kattan on the plane. Let's see. There's a story in the Washington Post. The headline reads, Deal of the Art. So we knew that George W. Bush took up the painting when he retired, when he, you know, left the White House. And he's doing, he does shows and he sells them. I guess he makes some money. You know who else is painting? Not me. You know about me. Yeah, maybe I'll show you some more of my new stuff. But Hunter Biden. Now, look, I've stayed away from the Hunter Biden smears. Every family's got one. It got a black sheep, you know, got the problem child, the one who, you know, it always comes up. And so Hunter Biden, there's the thing with the laptop. There's the thing with the Burisma and the, you know, working for these companies overseas. He has no business doing any of that. Well, now what I didn't know is he's an artist and he must be really, really good because you know how much his artwork is selling for? I'm giving you a second. Oh, okay. That's it. Chris Kattan, who was a comedian on Saturday Night Live, was kicked off a plane for not wearing a mask. That's the story. Well, good. He should have been. Fucking asshole. You go on a plane, you wear a mask. I know it's an inconvenience, but tough shit. Lives are at stake. Okay. Thank you for filling me in on that. I went on the plane with his nose dripping, and I think he had COVID, and I think he refused to wear his mask, and they either kicked him off the plane or they delayed the plane. Okay. Chris Kattan, good to know. I won't be watching any of his stuff anytime soon. Not that he cares, but it'll make me feel better. Anyway, so here's the deal with Hunter Biden. I'm just going to read to you from the Washington Post because I can't paraphrase this. White House officials have helped craft an agreement under which purchases of Hunter Biden's artwork, which could be listed as at prices as high as $500,000. Sorry. Well, I know. I choke on an amount that big. Will be kept confidential from even the artist himself in an attempt to avoid ethical issues that could arise as a presidential family member tries to sell a product with a highly subjective value. You think? All right. So, this is ridiculous. So this New York gallery owner is planning a show of Hunter Biden's artwork, and he's planning to set prices for the art and will withhold all records, including potential bidders and final buyers, from everyone, including Hunter Biden. So this gallery owner's name is Georges Bourget. Really, Georges, G-E-O-R-G-E-S, B-E-R-G-E accent S. I'm saying he's from Brooklyn and his name is like George Burgo. And he did this because he owns a gallery. Anyway, he's also agreed to reject any offer that he deems suspicious or that comes in over the asking price. Oh, give me a break. Here's the thing. I don't care. If you're being transparent and you're having this open administration, you don't put up more walls of secrecy. This is nonsense. Because it's not like a potential buyer wouldn't then, you know, spread it all over the interwebs. Oh, I purchased this Hunter Biden for $500,000 cool bucks. Really? Back to the Washington Post. It says, Biden's art sale, expected to take place this fall, comes with potential challenges. Not only has Biden previously been accused of trading in on his father's name, but his latest vocation is in a field where works do not have a tangible fixed value and where concerns have arisen about secretive buyers and undisclosed sums. You think? Further on down the article, says the arrangement is drawing detractors, including ethics experts as well as art critics, who suggest that Hunter Biden's art would never be priced so high if he had a different last name. Burgess has said that prices for the paintings would range from $75,000 to $500,000. Are you kidding me? Okay, so I've got some I've got some artwork that I'll sell you for, you know, 1/100th of the price. Here, hold on. So I've been playing, you know, I do all the pet portraits, and I am available for your commissions. Lately, I've been playing with these stained glassy kind of things. So I did this, right? And it's like faux stained glass. It's just, it's on Illustrator board, but it's all shiny and it looks sort of like it's stained glass. And then I decided to get even more creative, and I got, I took a, you know, an old painting, threw away the painting and kept the frame, and I did my own little fake stained glass. I'll sell this for $20. I don't need 75,000. Well, I do need 75,000, but really, $500,000? Not even a George W. Bush is worth $500,000. That's insane. All right. So that happened. I'm astounded. You know, I thought I can pick up a few extra bucks with my painting. I'll paint your pet's portrait. Just send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. But really, yeah, John Doe, you like the dog in the water behind me, right? That's a great picture, isn't it? I love it. You can buy those or I can paint your dog. Anyway, if you're interested, just email me. I'm cheap. I mean, looking at Hunter Biden, I'm downright a bargain. I was a bargain before anyway. By the way, in case you hadn't heard, remember Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer? Remember the guy who was on MSNBC every time you turned around? $100,000, Joby? You want to give me $100,000? I'll take it. I'll take, you know, I'll take 100. Shit, I'll take 40. I'm not proud. Or I am proud. But either way. Anyway, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, who was on MSNBC, oh my God, Lawrence O'Donnell and all those shows had him on constantly. And I kept thinking, this is going to blow up in their faces one day. Well, today's the day. Michael Avenatti was sentenced to 30 months. That's 2.5 years for those of us keeping track, for trying to extort Nike. And that's not all. He stands trial again next year on separate charges of defrauding Stormy Daniels and some of his other clients. Nice, right? Yeah. You can't trust anybody. Well, some people you can't trust. So the other big news story today is, of course, the withdrawal of our troops from Afghanistan. And that's a good thing, right? I mean, we've been there for 20 years. And in my book, that's 20 years too long. We never should have gone in the first place. And I came into Joe Biden's speech about it a little late, which frankly is a good thing. Look, I cringed when I'd listened to Trump try to deliver a speech because he was the worst orator ever in presidential history, mostly because he had no clue what he was talking about. Joe Biden is just not a good public speaker. I think he understands what he's saying. He's just slow and it's sort of tortured. But I do want to share with you, I think I have the video up here. After his speech, and the speech didn't last all that long, but then he took questions. You know, he's always being razzed for not taking enough questions from the press. First of all, whoever was, you know, staffing his press at this event screwed up, because it was some years ago. You remember in the old days, and come on, we're old around here, that the when there was a press conference, even a briefing, it used to be a free-for-all where the reporters would shout out questions and then the president would point to one and everyone would finally shut up. And then, I don't know if it was during the Clinton years, I don't remember when the change happened, but somebody made them be orderly about it. And the shouting stopped. Well, today, it was like old times again. And so Joe Biden is, it's not here. I thought I had it up here. Oh, I got it. I see it's here. So Joe Biden, after his speech, stuck around and took some questions. So NBC News edited it down to like a 3-minute segment. I had the whole thing, but I'm not going to subject you to 10 minutes of it. But here's Biden answering the questions for 3 minutes. And here's what I want you to notice. The reporters are almost accusatory towards him. It's almost as if they're yelling at him for pulling the troops out of Afghanistan, something that's 20 years overdue. I'm shocked. I don't know what happened to decorum, but it doesn't exist. And some of the questions I thought were horrible. And Joe Biden wasn't exactly great with his answers either. Not so much the substance, but the delivery. All right. Here's what went on.
Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?
No, it is not.
Why?
Because you have the Afghan troops have 300,000 well-equipped as any army in the world.
Okay.
And an air force.
Oh, yeah.
Against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable.
President, you trust the Taliban, sir?
Do you trust the Taliban?
Is that a serious question?
It's absolutely a serious question. You trust the Taliban?
No, I do not.
Country to the Taliban.
No, I do not trust the Taliban.
So why are you saying that? Is the U.S. responsible for the death?
And they don't even let him answer the question.
Mr. President, will you amplify that question, please? Will you amplify your answer, please, why you don't trust the Taliban?
It's a silly question. Do I trust the Taliban? No. But I trust the capacity of the Afghan military, who is better trained, better equipped, and more competent in terms of conducting war.
Yes, in terms of conducting war.
Thank you, Mr. President. Given the amount of money that has been spent and the number of lives that have been lost, in your view, with making this decision, were the last 20 years worth it?
What question? That's Caitlin Collins.
You know my record. I can tell by the way you asked the question.
Well, she should know your record. She's the White House chief reporter for CNN.
Having American forces in Afghanistan. I argued from the beginning, as you may recall, it came to light after the administration was over, our administration.
Okay.
No nation has ever unified Afghanistan.
That's true.
No nation.
That's true.
Empires have gone there and not done it. The focus we had, and I strongly supported, and you may remember, I physically went to Afghanistan. I was up in that pass where Osama bin Laden was allegedly escaped or out of harm's way.
What? Huh?
We went for two reasons. One, to...
Yeah? Come on, Joe.
Bring Osama bin Laden to the gates of hell.
Okay.
As I said at the time.
Oy.
The second reason was to eliminate Al-Qaeda's capacity to deal with more attacks on the United States from that territory. We accomplished both of those objectives. Period.
Okay.
That's what I believed from the beginning, why we should be and why we should have gone to Afghanistan. That job had been over for some time. And that's why I believe that this is the right decision and, quite frankly, overdue.
Okay, well, it was the right decision. And
when I announced our drawdown.
And was overdue. I'm not going to do any more. So that's another clip. But it's just torturous listening to him. And I get it. Look, he's an old man. But this is what worries me. Not so much that Joe Biden's old. We knew he was old. I don't buy the rights. Oh, he needs a cognitive test. I just think he's old and a bit slower than he used to be. And Joe Biden was never a great public speaker. But it does give me pause, as they say, because I'm concerned about what happens next time. Now, we still have to get past the midterms before the next presidential election, so maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. We've got to be concerned about what happens in 2022, where we have, tomorrow, just so you know, I'm going to be joined by David Daley. David Daley is the author of the book Rat Fucked. He writes a lot about gerrymandering and things like that. And he wrote a piece for, I think it was The Guardian last week that I'll post tomorrow so you can read up before he comes on or afterwards. And he says the Republicans could take back the House before anybody even casts a single vote, simply by how they draw the districts, because they control the majority of state legislatures. And it, going off the 2020 census, such as it was, they get to redraw the districts. These are the elements for the perfect storm. So more than ever, as energized as we were to vote Trump out, we've got to be even more energized to stop the Republicans from stealing what's left of our democracy. So today is Thursday. And you know that on Thursdays, Howie Klein is usually here. Today is no different. And Howie Klein, in addition to blogging at downwithtyranny.com, he runs the Blue America Pack. And I know, look, we've talked about Blue America so much over the years, but for the newcomers who may not know, Blue America is a pack. It's a political action committee, but unlike the others that you know of. It's Howie Klein, Digby, and John Amato of Crooks and Liars. And Howie vets every single candidate. And they go out searching. It's not, sometimes candidates will come to him, but he goes out and finds them. And some of the best, he encourages them to run. And then he raises money for them. So unlike other PACs, the money doesn't come through him. He sends the people who are giving money, he sends them directly to Act Blue, which is the mechanism for the Democrats that collects the money and distributes it. That's their purpose. That's what they were set up to do. Howie and Digby and John, Blue America, they don't take a cut. They don't make any money off of running this pack. And most do, just in case you didn't know. Most definitely do. They're in it for the right reasons, to find the best. And by best, I mean most progressive, electable candidates who will make great elected officials. So today, we'll get Howie on the line in just a moment. And today we're going to be joined by a man named Lucas Kuntz, who is running for, who's ever calling. I don't have time to take your call right now. Sorry, because I got to get Howie on in just a minute. You know what? Yeah, let's do this really quickly.
For the right reason, to find the best.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I brought you up, but I'm hearing you. I'm hearing the sound coming back through the. There you are. Hi.
Is this Nicole Sandler? Hi.
Who's this?
My name is Louise O'Brien. I'm calling from New York City. There was just two points I wanted to make. I loved Nicole's, when she did the watercolor of the Capitol the entire thing being under whatever. And the thing is I think that should be an NFT, in the crypto world.
Right.
Because, the bottom line is it's a protest, because we do have the stuff going on now in Congress. where we're going to actually review this.
Okay.
I didn't purchase the painting because it was too painful to look at. And the other thing is what I wanted to say about Afghanistan.
Yes.
Was the bottom line is you know, we screwed it up. Afghanistan in the 1970s was becoming a modern country.
Right. You know what? I'm
because they're afraid of whatever.
Right.
And you had Reagan then.
Okay. You know what, caller? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to do this to you, but I have Howie Klein coming up. By the way, this is Nicole. You got through. When you call here, you get me. That's just all it is.
But I
have Howie Klein.
I just think there's lots of great stuff, and I think people need to understand also too what happened in Afghanistan.
Okay, let's talk tomorrow. Okay, do me a favor. I gotta pot you down because you're not being quiet. Tomorrow at the beginning of the show, call back in the first 30 minutes. Phone lines are open. You're welcome to call in. But I got to get Howie Klein on the line, and we got Lucas standing by, and so I don't want to take up the time with this phone call. So please, caller, call back tomorrow in the first half hour of the show, and we will talk. Okay? All right? Okay. Thank you. And the NFTs, I'm fascinated with that. We're going to have to talk about that one of these days. All right. But so now I'm late. So whose turn is it? Who's mixing up the Dirty Debbies today? Is it your turn? Okay, well, do it while I get Howie on the phone, okay?
You a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Howie Klein, you there?
I am.
Hey, Howie Klein. Sorry, I got a phone call just a moment before I was going to call you, and I thought I was going to make it quick, and it was somebody who was talking, so we got off on a tangent. Anyway, I'm here. You're there. How are things?
Things are good. Thank you. Everything's great. I thought we were going to have a lot of banging because I'm getting a roof put on my house, but they just left.
Oh, good. And I'm here.
Literally, the whole house has been shaking for the last 2 days, and the noise has been unbelievable.
Oh, my. Okay, well, yeah. I'm glad it ended. Thanks. And, you know, I'm in the middle of, like, a torrential downpour, thunderstorm, lightning, everything, and I'm amazed, you know, Florida Power and Light, every time it rains, the lights flicker. So I'm thinking we're going to get booted off the air. But so far, knocking on wood laminate here. So we're still on, and the rain appears to have been letting up a little bit. So that's good. And we have our guest standing by. So before we bring him on, what do you want to tell us about Lucas? And how do you pronounce his last name?
Well, he'd probably be better off to tell us, but it's like the U would be a double O.
Coons. All right. That's what I thought. Because you got to be careful. K-U-N-C-E.
Yeah.
Right. You know. Anyway.
Anyway, so Missouri is usually used to be thought of as a swing state, and in more recent years, it's a really, really red state. They're going through, you know, some really tough times right now because there are so many Trumpists there that the state has very, very low vaccination rate and hospitalization. You know, daily caseloads and hospitalization rates are skyrocketing.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, it's really kind of time to get like a sane person in office. So the state is very, very red. And I looked really closely at the people who are running for this open Missouri Senate seat.
And it's open because Roy Blunt is retiring.
Definitely the one who can win this seat. And you know, we'll let him talk a little bit about why. But I was very, very, very impressed by his platform and the way he's trying to reach Missouri voters. Very, very different from the establishment Democrats who have run before and, in fact, who are probably going to challenge him in the primary.
Okay. Well, you know what? He's standing by, so let's not wait any longer. Let's bring him in. Hey, Lucas, welcome to the show. And do tell us how to pronounce your name properly.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sure thing. It's Lucas Kuntz.
Kuntz.
You guys nailed it, like a double O.
Awesome. I like the author, but who spells it differently? Dean Kuntz.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. There's actually like six different ways to spell it, and it just depends on who you got when you rolled the dice coming through Ellis Island.
Oh, interesting. And where is your family from who went through Ellis Island?
It's originally like kind of on the border of Germany and France, and the original spelling is K-U-N-Z in Germany.
Interesting. But you are from Missouri. Yeah.
Were they from Alsace-Lorraine?
It was, yeah. Well, it's like Freiburg and then kind of around there.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Do you know that Howie has been everywhere? Howie is the most traveled person that I know next to Alan Grayson, right?
That's right.
So he,
and Lucas has done some traveling as well. In fact, weren't you stationed in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Yeah. My traveling has been very glamorous. Iraq once, Afghanistan twice. And then I actually led U.S. arms control negotiations from the joint staff at the Pentagon with NATO and Russia. So I spent a lot of time flying to NATO to sort of organize the allies and then Vienna, Austria to negotiate with Russians.
Wow. So let me ask you, now that we're pulling out of Afghanistan, what are your thoughts on that? How do you feel?
Should have done it a long time ago, probably like within the first year, I suspect. But
or should we have even gone in the first place?
Yeah, I think it kind of made sense to knock Al-Qaeda out of their stronghold. But that happened very quickly. And then, you know, we could have just left. And if the Taliban let them come back, then we would just do it again. And it would have saved us a lot of time and a lot of money. You know, it was tough watching people that I work with get killed over there and, you know, watch us spend $6.4 trillion in the Middle East for absolutely nothing.
Wow. Yeah. And that's horrible.
I was really I am really eager to talk with you about your domestic platform. But since we're talking a little bit about Afghanistan now, I just want to say that although Republicans get all the blame and they deserve lots of blame, after the first year in Afghanistan, when you say we should have dropped out, there were a lot of Democrats, including liberal Democrats, who were saying, well, we've got to save the women and we've got to build a democracy and we've got to change this place that's been the same for 2,000 years or more. And I was like fighting with people who I usually am allied with, telling them we're not going to change it. It's not going to happen. We can't do it. And you can't do it in the barrel of a gun and like forget it. And here we are decades later and nothing's changed.
Nothing. And I don't know if you saw the press conference today.
That isn't why you're running. Well, I don't think that's what's motivating you to run. I get the impression from talking with you and talking with people on your campaign and reading your campaign website that you're motivated by something very, very different, which is basically giving average, ordinary American citizens a fair break and taking away some of the power from corporate America. Do I have that right?
That's right, Howie. So, I mean, what I want to do is I want to fundamentally change who has power in our country. And I think that's what most of us should want to do because the system's not working for us. And I don't think that if you work or try to live your life in a decent way, you should be living paycheck to paycheck or one disaster from bankruptcy, right? And I say that because personally, that's how I grew up. I mean, I watched my mom write, you know, both my parents worked, and I remember watching my mom write the check at the grocery store and asking the cashier not to cash it until the end of the month, you know, 3, 5, 7 days ahead of time so we could make it. And then when my little sister was born and had to have an open heart surgery, our family went bankrupt from the medical bills. And, you know, it's hard. But you know what? We were talking about Iraq and Afghanistan earlier, and I mentioned that $6.4 trillion. And that actually is a huge motivation for me to run because of you know, the just a willingness to spend that kind of money for absolutely nothing. And then seeing what's happening in states like Missouri, where we've had the worst economic recovery from the Great Recession. And, you know, essentially capital has left our state and our country has been unwilling to put it back in there. And I saw that coming home from my deployments. You know, I came back from Iraq in 2009 to visit my parents in my old neighborhood. And I walked down the street, four doors down, to see the old house that I lived in before that. And it had fallen apart, bulldozed down. It's now an empty lot. I come back from Afghanistan a while later, the house that I was talking about before, my parents had to leave because my dad couldn't find a job. And it's now vacant and abandoned. The corner store is boarded up. Those grocery stores where they used to let us float a check are now gone. You got to go to sort of a Dollar General or a Walmart equivalent. And guess what? Those people aren't going to let you float a check, right? If you're doing that, what are you stuck with? You're stuck with a payday loan at 300, 600, whatever percent interest. And I can tell you what, if we grew up that way, we'd have gone bankrupt a lot more than one time. And so to me, it's just we all need to fundamentally change who has power in our country because it's not working for most of us.
Wow. You know, you mentioned that house. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take 2 minutes and show everyone your campaign kickoff video because you show the house. And it's a wonderful video. So let's do that. We'll just take a quick pause here for a moment. You can see it as well at Lucas Kunz, LucasKunce.com. That's the campaign website. But here right now is the campaign kickoff video that shows that house.
On an old cracked street in Jeff City, Missouri, sits a forgotten house. A place I used to call home. Full of memories. Good times and tough times. Growing up, my family struggled. My sister was born with a heart condition. Hospital bills kept coming and my parents eventually went bankrupt. But then, our neighbors and friends lifted us up. They gave me the chance to make something of myself. So I did. I went to Yale and became a U.S. Marine to honor those who had given me so much. But every time I came home, from Iraq and then Afghanistan, things had changed. The community I loved had been hollowed out. Jobs shipped away for Wall Street profits. The wealth of our state sucked dry by guys like Josh Hawley and Roy Blunt, and their top donors who got rich stripping our communities for parts. The house I called home sits empty now, but Missouri is still standing. It's time to Marshall Plan the Midwest. Fight to invest right here in the heartland, where we've been making things for generations. We'll replace the broken system that divides us. Break the grip of corporate power. Join together, black, white, and brown, young and old. This is where we build our future. On the cracked streets, in the forgotten neighborhoods.
Lucas Kunz, paid for by Lucas Kunz for Missouri. It's beautiful. It says everything. When you say it's time to Marshall Plan Missouri, what do you mean?
What I want to do, I think we need to make a huge financial investment in the Midwest and the places that have been left behind by specifically Wall Street and the big tech industry, and just have a jobs creation program here. And honestly, like, the reason I call it the Marshall Plan is because, you know, after World War II, we spent a bunch of money in Western Europe building that area up. And then I watched us spend all this money in Iraq and Afghanistan trying to build that country up, too. And by God, I think it's time we spent some money and invested right here in the places that have been left behind by our economy that doesn't work. And so, you know, if we just and the crazy thing is, you know, I noticed this when I was negotiating with Russians. I would go over to NATO, and it was sometimes hard to get our NATO allies on board with our harder positions against Russia because they rely on Russia for natural gas and petroleum products. Right. And so what we have is we got this situation where we are essentially funding or Western Europe is funding Russia's nuclear weapons program, all its military misadventures and things like that, because they're hooked on their hydrocarbon chemicals. And so I say, why don't we invest all that money in building renewable energy right here in the Midwest, ship that to Europe, and then we save a ton of money trying to deal with Russia, Russian nuclear weapons, everything like that, and cut the feet right out from under them. I mean, there are just so many benefits to investing here in America in something like renewable energy, which is what I'd like to do on the Marshall Plan, including saving the planet, which right. would be pretty nice.
Right. And how do you think, you know, Congress is in the midst of these two alleged infrastructure bills, the bipartisan one and then the reconciliation one. What do you think of how that's all coming together or not?
I think we need to be aggressive. I think we need to go all out on this. I think that the reason you have people voting for people like, or you have voters voting for people like Donald Trump in the Midwest or in all of these states is because they've been left behind by our economy. And he knows how to take advantage of it. First of all, he acknowledges it. You have not seen Democrats acknowledging that for a very long time. We kind of became the party of big tech and Wall Street for a while there. Mm-hmm. Not that Republicans were any better. I'm not saying that at all. They were worse. But like just the fact, just acknowledging that is important. And that spoke to people. But I don't see why Democrats can't become aggressive and become the party that actually does something about it. And so I say we need to be aggressive. We need to do something about it. We need to ignore anybody who's trying to obstruct us. And we need to win this next round of elections so that we can ensure that those investments are made. And yeah. So that's what we're going to do.
Absolutely. Howie Klein, we need to win this next round of elections. How are we going to do that?
And we need to win them not with corporate conservatives like Kyrsten Sinema, but we need to win them with progressive and populists like Lucas. That's a really, really big difference. And you know, when you said a minute ago the bipartisan infrastructure bill, it could be misleading to people who aren't paying close attention. It's bipartisan because there are some conservative Republicans and some conservative Democrats who got together and came up with some conservative plan. But it's not bipartisan if you want to think about, you know, both liberals and conservatives got together. That's not it. There was not one single liberal who had anything to do with it. It was all conservatives, all the Kyrsten Sinemas and Joe Manchins. Those are the kind of people that were on that little self-appointed committee that put together this awful infrastructure bill that the establishment is trying to push through with the help of the media. I hate to call it bipartisan. I always call it conservative because that is a better description of what it is.
Right. And anyway, the thing is, Joe Biden said he won't sign it without the other one in tandem, and that created a whole firestorm. And that's what I'm asking, Lucas, is this a way to do it? You said we need to be more aggressive. I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be aggressive. We need to deliver for people. I mean, that's the main thing. We need to deliver for working people in this country. And if certain Democrats and most Republicans aren't willing to do it, then we need to shove it down their throats and make it happen.
There you go.
Yes. So, Lucas, I like all of the stuff that is in your platform. And like I said earlier, people just go to your website and read the whole platform. It's very clear and simple. But are the people who have been voting for these really crazy right-wing Republicans in Missouri, are they going to how are you going to convince them that this is something that's good for them?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You know, when this seat was last up, we had a Republican incumbent, Roy Blunt, and we had another veteran running against him, Jason Kander. In a huge Trump year, and Jason Kander only lost by 2.8 percentage points. You know, if Trump wasn't on the ticket that year, Jason Kander would be a senator right now, and I wouldn't be running for reelection. We don't have Trump on the ticket. And in the meantime, Missouri has passed four very progressive ballot measures by huge percentages. You know, the state pushed back right to work by 67 to 33, huge margin for a pro-union measure. We expanded Medicaid. We passed medical marijuana and a minimum wage that's $5 above the federal level. So people want things that deliver. We just have to actually stand for that and show them that this is what we stand for and what we're going to do. And the other thing that we've got is, you know, after my 13 years in the Marine Corps, I left to work at a nonprofit that fights corporate monopolies. And so we're talking about the big ag companies that crush Missouri farmers and have been cutting them out for about a generation now. We're talking about the big you know, the big pharmaceutical companies that'll take the price of insulin from $25 to $275 just because they can. Talking about big defense industry and several others like big tech. And so no one has that message, but everyone in Missouri knows that the reason our economy is the way that it is and the reason we've been getting crushed is because of corporate consolidation. And it's because of the way that the system doesn't work for us. So what I'm saying is I'm acknowledging the system is broken and I'm going to deliver on how we can fix it. And so far, we, you know, most people aren't really, they're not doing both of those things. They're either saying the system is broken, like Donald Trump, and then hiring the, you know, a Goldman Sachs guy to run his economy, or they're not acknowledging that the system is broken, like a lot of Democrats are doing. So we're going to do both of those things. And we're going to, you know, we're going to show how we're going to deliver.
It's a pretty crowded primary field, both, I think, on both sides of the aisle. But some of the people running, and the seat is going to be vacant because Roy Blunt is retiring. So that's whose seat this is. Unfortunately, Josh Hawley still has a couple of years left. But one of the people running on the Republican side is the guy who during the marches surrounding George Floyd's murder, he and his wife, you know, were so afraid of the Black Lives Matter protesters marching down their street that they came out of their house and pointed guns at them. The guy whose name escapes me for good reason was ordered by the court to get rid of the gun. And then he did. And then he thumbed his nose at the court and turned around and bought another gun. He's running for the Senate seat as well.
Yeah. Old Mansion Man Mark McCloskey with his palace actually on the Central West End in St. Louis thinks he's a cowboy. And, you know, it's embarrassing. He's just an asshole. And we made a funny video making fun of him that went viral. But the other side's chock full of criminals. Look, you got him. He's supported by Michael Flynn. Oh, there's another criminal for you.
Yeah.
We got Eric Greitens, our disgraced former governor who had to resign when he was impeached by the Republican legislature for essentially sexually assaulting someone and stealing from his veterans charity.
Oh, my God.
That was founded to help people like me and my buddies coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so he's supported by Rudy Giuliani, another crook, and several others. And so that's what we're up against. But you know what? We are crushing it. Our message is really resonating. We've almost raised $1 million in just over 3 months. Howie, thank you for some help with that. And we did that without taking a single cent from a corporate PAC. Our average donation is $30, and we got I think we're 25,000 donations. So we have a large grassroots movement. It's the way to do it. We want to stay pure on that. I'm never going to take a dime from a corporate PAC. In fact, I want to abolish them altogether because I know that not everybody has the willpower to run a campaign like we are.
Well, that's right. And you know, before I brought you on, and Howie, before I got you on the line, I was telling the listeners, for those who don't know, a little bit about Blue America. And when you talk about a PAC, a political action committee, they run the gamut. There's all kinds of them. Blue America is on one end of the spectrum, and you've got these corporate PACs on the other. Blue America helps candidates raise money, but they don't take any money. All the money goes right into the campaign coffers. And so those are the kind, if you're going to give money to a PAC, it's the Blue America you want to go with. Otherwise, you want to go directly to the candidate. Is that right, Howie?
Well, sort of right. The thing is that you don't give money to Blue America. We have a page, a Blue America page, and on there you give money directly to the candidate.
Right.
So the money that you give doesn't go to us for us to then give to the candidates. The money that you give goes directly to Lucas, not through us. I don't see it. I don't touch it. It just goes right into Lucas's at Blue bank account.
Right.
So Lucas, though, why don't you tell us that aside from donating, which is very important, and I'm sure we're going to tell people how to do that at the end of this, but what else can people do in Missouri and in other places who are listening to us now? What can they do to help?
Yeah, it's a grassroots movement. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and spread the word. I mean, that's what this race is all about. If we're going to fundamentally change who has power, it's going to have to come from the bottom up. And, you know, the good thing there is 99% of Americans are at the bottom, myself included. And then we got these crazy, you know, super mega rich people, you know, making trillions of dollars during the pandemic off of the rest of us. Who control the rest? And so all of us normal, everyday working people need to band together talk about this, talk about the message, you know, and help spread it. So really, you know, everything right now is about reach, reaching as many people as possible. If you got family in Missouri, tell them about the campaign. If you got friends there, tell them about the campaign, whether you live there or not, and then just follow what we're doing. We're doing great things.
Awesome.
Oh, you know what? You just reminded me of something that I didn't even think of. When I was, I went to the Galapagos one time, and I met the dean of one of the schools at the at Washington University in St. Louis, and I just thought I should call him and his wife and tell them about your campaign. I will. I'll do that today.
Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. Howie delivering. Yes.
Right. That's how it works. I mean, and that's how it works. We all know people in other parts of the country. In fact, you know, Brad Friedman, who hosts the Bradcast at the Brad blog, his family's from St. Louis. His mother still lives there. His sister lives there. And
oh,
so,
Brad, get us some voters, man.
Why don't we introduce Brad and Lucas so that Lucas can be on his show as well.
I will do that. Just so you know, Brad is more he's a straight journalist. So he doesn't, you know, here's the thing. I'm thrilled. I think it's really important during primary season to bring on the great candidates because, frankly, that's when I'm most involved. You too, Howie. Because in primary season, that's when we can find the best candidates, the most progressive, the ones who aren't afraid to put their platform on the website, who say, this is what I stand for, and I'm proud of it, and I want you to know that. There are some shows that won't, like Tom Hartman, for instance, won't talk to anybody during a primary season. He waits for the general election. But by that time, I think it's too late. So I will certainly introduce you to Brad, but I don't know that he'll have you on his show just because he tries to be more the journalist and neutral.
Well, maybe he'll call his family and he'll still be getting
exactly
somewhere.
That's not on the air. That's talking to his family about the best candidate. And I have every reason to believe he would do that. So I'll check.
I think I'll have Lucas on the air.
Okay. I think so too. But because he's from St. Louis, so we'll try.
Good. So Lucas, I know this is a peculiar question, but if it was up to you, which of the Republicans would you prefer to run against?
Well, the fun thing is that I'm running against all of them right now. So we're going after all of them with different sets of advertising, you know, different comments, different sort of venues. I honestly, they all are so flawed that I'm ready to just rock and roll against any of them.
Good answer.
Great. Are you getting a fair shot from Missouri media? Are they covering you as much as they're covering the more establishment candidates?
We're getting a lot of coverage, and I think it's just because we are doing the fundamentals right. We're raising more money than anyone else, as far as I can tell, by far, on the Democratic side. I don't want to call us the front runner yet, but it's starting to look that way. And so, you know, we're getting national coverage. We're getting state coverage. Things are looking pretty good.
And how about Chuck Schumer, who has tended to be historically not great when it comes to picking his candidates, and he should stay out of primaries, frankly. How are they treating you?
Chuck Schumer hasn't called me yet, so
the party.
I think that they're probably. It looks like they're just going to stand out for a while. I think see kind of how things shake.
I hope so. I hope so, because he tends to stick his nose in.
The way
in
I first met Lucas was through someone who I think you had on your show this week, Matt Stoller.
He was on yesterday. Yeah.
And you and Matt work together sometimes. Is that right, Lucas?
Yeah, we work at the same nonprofit. Yes.
Oh, cool. Well, Matt was on the show yesterday. We talked about, you know, things that you. Oh, now I get the connection of wanting to erase, you know, corporate PACs and do away with with monopolies and break them all up.
Right. It's like, I like a corporation, but I like a competitive market where everybody can compete. We can have innovation and we can all do well and like really like live our dreams out. And right now we have oppressive markets with private regulators that aren't accountable to any taxpayer, any shareholder. I mean, I just want us all to have a fair shake again.
There you go.
About what Matt said too, but that's the way it should be.
That is the way it should be. The website is lucaskuntz.com. lucaskunce.com, L-U-C-A-S-K-U-N-C-E. You can find Lucas on Twitter at lucaskunce, M-O. And I'll post all that on the blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast. And go there, go to the website, sign up, volunteer, get involved. Let's get Lucas into Congress. It would make an immeasurable difference right off the bat.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks, Howie. This was fun.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, Howie.
Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, Lucas. It was great meeting you. All right.
Bye.
You take care. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we are done. That's a Thursday show for you. Do check out. And I will put all this stuff on the website so you can go to Lucas's site. And whether you can give money or not, there are other ways you can help. He sounds just great. See, this is why I have hope. If we can replace Roy Blunt with a Lucas Kuntz, then we don't need Joe Manchin, right? And why don't we replace, who else is retiring? Rob Portman in Ohio. I don't know who's running on. We'll have to get with Howie. But if we replace these Republicans with good progressive Democrats, we can have nice things, right? Right. All right. Tomorrow, I will frighten you a little more. As I mentioned earlier, David Daley, the guy who wrote the book Rat Fucked about gerrymandering, will be on to talk about the fact that Republicans are planning on winning back the House before anyone casts a single vote because they have the power of drawing the districts gerrymandering. So we'll go down that road tomorrow. As always, thank you all for listening. I couldn't do it without you. And I will leave you with a look at the day's news because we can. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Globally, more than 4 million people have now died from COVID-19. 4 million. Although things seem to be getting better here in the U.S., new data underscores the desperate need for more vaccinations. For example, every person who died of COVID-19 in June in the state of Maryland was unvaccinated. And now that the Delta variant is spreading more, some experts are asking whether we should test vaccinated people for the virus and whether vaccinated people should resume using masks in certain situations. According to new data from Johns Hopkins University, the United States is now averaging over 15,000 new cases each day. That's up nearly 50% from the CDC's estimate of 10,350 just about 2 weeks ago. The Associated Press is reporting that the number of lives lost around the world over the past year and a half is about equal to the population of Los Angeles or the nation of Georgia. And by some estimates, it's roughly the number of people killed in battle in all of the world's wars since 1982. Dr. Fauci isn't mincing words.
What we're talking about is trying to save lives. Where there are high levels of vaccination, there's low levels of infection, low hospitalization, and almost no deaths. Where you have no vaccination, you have higher levels of infection, higher risk, and hospitalization. It's not complicated. Here we have a vaccine that's highly, highly effective in preventing disease and certainly in preventing severe disease and hospitalization. It's easy to get, it's free, and it's readily available. So, you know, you've got to ask, what is the problem? Get over it. Get over this political statement. Just get over it and try and save the lives of yourself and your family.
Well, Tropical Storm Elsa made landfall Wednesday on Florida's Gulf Coast just north of Tampa, bringing heavy rains, high winds, and dangerous storm surge. One person died in Jacksonville when a tree fell on two cars. The storm then passed through Georgia, leaving lots of damage in its wake, and reached eastern South Carolina early Thursday. The top sustained winds are down to 40 miles per hour in tropical storm territory. Tropical storm warnings were extended to parts of the Northeast as Elsa heads north, and we say good riddance. Thankfully, the storm avoided the southeast coast of Florida, where Miami-Dade County officials said Wednesday that there was no longer any hope of finding survivors at the site of the collapsed Surfside condominium building. So they shifted the mission from rescue to recovery, though it seems that most of the people working on the pile don't view their jobs as having changed at all.
You know, we participated in the moment of silence and the service that was held here. We shut down operations. We all lined up around the pile, and they, you know, did their service. But at the end of the day, when their service was done, we went right back to work because this is our job. Our job is to do the best that we can as quickly as possible to remove anybody, any victim that's remaining in that building so that we can bring them home to their loved ones and then we can go home to ours.
This news came on a day when crews found 18 more bodies in the rubble. The confirmed death toll as of Thursday morning stands at 60. Around 80 people are still missing and unaccounted for. No survivors have been found since the first hours after the building collapsed 2 weeks ago. Rescue crews from all over the country and even far reaches of the planet are still working on the pile. Meanwhile, New York City held a ticker tape parade Wednesday to thank the essential workers who got the city through the COVID-19 pandemic. Haiti is in turmoil after President Morsi was assassinated during an attack at his home Wednesday morning. Four suspects connected to the attack were killed by police. Another two have been detained. Haiti's ambassador to the U.S. said the suspects were foreigners, and Haitian police are working to determine their nationalities. Haiti's borders and international airport are closed, and martial law has been imposed since the attack. Acting Prime Minister Claude Joseph declared a state of siege in the country and is pleading with citizens to stay calm. Morsi's death came amid deep political instability. Although the U.S. media hadn't been covering it, he was wildly unpopular. There have been massive protests against him, which got stronger in February, but have been going on for years. Haiti's opposition movement has long called for Morsi to resign, but as of now, it's not clear who'll replace him in the coming months. The rescheduled 2020 Olympic Games are set to begin in Tokyo on July 23rd, though under a newly declared state of emergency due to a sudden spike in cases of COVID-19. Officials had already ruled out foreign spectators at the events, but now the restrictions are getting even tighter. Under the state of emergency, there will be no spectators in any of the stands. Arizona's top elections official has called for a criminal investigation into what she described as the former guy's intense efforts to interfere with the counting of ballots in last year's presidential election. In a letter she posted to Twitter, Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs urged the state attorney general to probe reports that Trump and his allies, including Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and Kelly Ward, attempted to meddle with ballot counting. Hobbs cited reporting by the Arizona Republic that said that Ward, chairwoman of the Arizona Republican Party, told the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, quote, "We need you to stop the counting." Hobbs wrote on Twitter, quote, "Local reporting recently uncovered intense efforts to interfere with the tabulation of ballots and canvass of the 2020 election in Maricopa County. In Arizona, interfering with election officials is a felony. Today I asked General Brnovich to investigate." According to the Arizona Republic, Brnovich has not yet responded. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.